Is it recording?
Okay, it should be recording. Yeah, it's recording.
This is recording. I don't see the... Oh, yeah, I see the sign. I'm looking at a book that is labelled as 1951 one. It's a notebook from my postdoctoral period at the University of Wisconsin in the Department of Chemistry, where I was a postdoc with Professor Jack Williams in physical chemistry at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. This notebook is the first of four notebooks which date back to that period, contain notes on various experiments related in the first book, at least, to electrophoresis. This was at that time there were not very many methods available for carrying out electrophoresis. The method that was used at the University of Wisconsin was the Tiselius method, which a protein solution was applied, was inserted into a container, basically a U-tube, with a high concentration of protein. And then two boundaries were formed, one on the left-hand upper part of the U-tube and the other on the right-hand part of the U-tube. And then optical machinery, as it were, lenses and light sources, etc., looked at the boundary formed the two U-tube, the tops of the two U-tubes between the protein solution and whatever buffer they had been the proteins had been dissolved in, and the recordings were obtained by refractive index differences. The amount of protein was quite considerable, the order of several hundred milligrams per experiment, and the volume of solution was quite appreciable. I don't remember exactly what, but of the order of maybe 10 cc's. And this book describes my introduction to that method by looking at instructions given by the other professor who worked with Jack Williams. There were two of them, Lou Gosting and Alberti. Alberti's name, I just forget his first name for the moment. It'll become clear. There is a history written by me of those days that has been published. It's published as a series of images and text under the title How It All Began, : A Personal History of Gel Electrophoresis, by myself, published in the journal Methods Mol Biol, volume 869, 1-21. It's possible to see a more coherent account of the electrophoresis experiment by going there. However, let's go back now to the book 1951. It says the notes on the papers are from the back and practical notes from the front, but in fact I don't find anything at the back, so it really is more or less in chronological order from the front. And it starts with quite simple experiments. It was quite simple details. For example, the first significant the page is dated September 21st, 1951, and it's describing my making of preparing a protein, beta-lactoglobulin, which I had been familiar with from my graduate students' days, because I'd used that protein for a lot of measurements. They'd also used it in Wisconsin, but I made a new batch of the protein. So it starts off with 10 a.m. milk from the university farm was skimmed about 9 a.m. By warming to 35 degrees centigrade, and I started with 10 gallons. And batch one was 19.5 liters, to which I added, and it goes on, 39.2 grams of ammonium sulfate per 100 mils, etc., etc., filtered through a coarse paper on plain funnels and onto a Buchner filter. And then it goes on, batch two was 15.24 liters, etc., etc. And so it goes on, and one can follow what was happening. Several pages later, for example, it says final LG, October 3rd, the LG being lactoglobulin, decided to unite the recovered lactoglobulin and now recrystallized by me three times. So I had in the period of time crystallized it several times in the few pages which are there. And it talks about Cecil Ogston modified. Cecil, that was Rupert Cecil, and Ogston was Sandy Ogston, had modified method for crystallization, and I got a final preparation after one more crystallization. I remember they were rather impressed with my ability to get crystals, because they'd made large quantities of beta-lactoglobulin, but it was an oily material, rather like a heavy oil that they would have in a container. And I showed them that all you had to do was scratch the side of the glass container to get a few flakes of glass which acted as a seed, and all the oily beta-lactoglobulin turned into crystals. So I got good points for that, and they thought I was rather impressive, I think. Going on, and then there's another one, page on lactoglobulin recovery and so forth. And then lactoglobulin checks, checking it in the ultracentrifuge with the help of Sidney Shulman, whom I don't remember anymore, I'm afraid, but on the Swedberg ultracentrifuge, and so on. And then October 8th, I did the first electrophoresis experiment with the Tiselius apparatus. Set it up in the cold room, pouring lactoglobulin directly into the U-tube, no pipettes, etc., etc., and boundaries very sharp. The protein concentration 1.8%, 1.8 grams per 100 milliliters. Let's see whether it says what the volume was. I don't see what the volume was exactly. But it talked about the current was turned on, the time, and the angles of the photograph. Very detailed record of what happened. And then a couple of accurate diagrams of what the electrophoresis pattern looked like. And it was rather strange, because the ascending and descending boundaries were not always the same, I found, and it's obviously complicated. The descending boundary gave three peaks, whereas three components, whereas the ascending boundary only gave one. And I later wrote about it, that it was really rather anomalous behavior, because the electrophoresis did not give the same results when you looked at the two boundaries. And it was later part of a paper that I wrote about anomalies of different methods of looking at protein purity. So this goes on in this way, and detailed calculations of the areas of the trace versus the angle of the knife edge, which was used to make what was called a Schlieren boundary image. Here we are, October 16, setting up electrophoresis with the same solutions, different angles for the method of illuminating the boundaries to give peaks. Detailed things. And then there is an experiment here when trying to measure diffusion. Lou Gosting was I think he was probably an assistant professor at the time, but he was one of Jack Williams's crew, Lou Gosting and Alberti together. Lou Gosting was very well known for his ability to measure diffusion constants very, very accurately. And here I am, diffusion measurements with an equivalent of 0.43% protein, and it shows the tracings, etc., and several pages which are crossed out for some reason. And then Bob, here's Alberti's name, Bob Alberti. He had some magnification factors, which I took down notes of, rather complicated. And then the results of the diffusion, I talked about the diffusion constants of this speak, etc., etc. And then I made a comment, the fact that this material has this diffusion constant leaves little doubt that it is lactoglobulin. Bob Alberti suggests its steady state nature indicates its purity, meaning that it was nicely pure. I go on for many pages of electrophoresis, area checks, and electrophoresis buffalo. October 31st, boundary formed, etc., etc. Conductivity measurements, pH measurements, all of them recorded in quite detail. November 2nd, here I'm measuring pH again. November 5th, buffer protein, etc. Quite a lot of detail. Calculations of volume changes, mobilities, descending and ascending boundaries, and so on. It goes on. The results were recorded by photography, and so there's a page here on during talking about getting the right exposure. During the latter part of the experiment, various exposures were tested, and I was rather a fan of photography, and I liked handling photographic material, and I tried reducing them with potassium ferrocyanide to improve the exposures, or not, rather the images of the exposures. And here we start with a series of precipitation tests and crystallization and labor. I've got to I've got through the letters of the alphabet, and I'm at a page on the 26th of November labeled I. PH is too high. And then the J on the 27th of November, K on the 27th, further experiments, etc. So repeat procedures used in the last set, but the run experiments were in buffer solution. Comments of this sort. Nothing very profound. All details of the different experiments, conductivity, quite precise measurements. I'm really always concerned about getting accurate and results as precisely as I can. So the pHs and the currents are recorded to 4 decimals. Current is 11, or time, 11, 14, 10 milliamps, and 11, 14, etc., 11, 19, and various other things. This experiment started at 11:14, and I'm still making measurements at 10 o'clock that night. I can see 11:14, 12:05, 2:05, 5:05, 7:05, 10:05, 11:05, 12:05, even 1 o'clock in the morning there. So I must have been quite energetic on December 4th, page M. M-O-P, we're at P, December 11th. Last 5 runs are practically indistinguishable, yet very different from the sodium chloride run, whatever that means. Q, I'm at Q, December 15th. R, December 16th. Here I am, January 16th. Solubility, I mean, I was using a pencil to write with, I don't know why, rather than the pen. Probably my pen had quit. Electrophoresis, S, again. Blanks. And so on, we go forward a couple of pages. 2, 3, 4 pages with big X's right through everything, I don't know why. I'm beginning to do some solubility measurements. I hadn't realized quite what was happening. We'll stop the recording a moment. In the work that I'm doing, no longer electrophoresis, but I'm beginning to investigate what I could call the precipitation curves with the protein beta-2 lactoglobulin, which is, as I said, very pure by all preceding methods of measurement, electrophoresis and diffusion and ultracentrifuge. So this is solubility measurements, and I made up a solution of sodium chloride, sodium acetate and acetic acid to get to a known pH, 0.04 molar sodium chloride and 0.01 molar sodium acetate and 0.01 molar acetic acid. And then I began to consider adding ammonium sulfate to cause precipitation. So this is the beginning of that work, a blank for the dilution factor of adding ammonium sulfate and the change in extinction with ammonium sulfate a buffer. And some little comments here, I might as well read them. If we have present some substance, for example, tyrosine, which is soluble in ammonium sulfate at 100% saturation, then measure the extinction of the solution against the added ammonium sulfate. We can correct for the dilution effect of the ammonium sulfate. and for the extinction which it may introduce at this wavelength, and so on. So June 19th I prepared the solution of tyrosine, so I'm doing it with tyrosine, just to get a sort of blank, because it's not, tyrosine is not precipitated by ammonium sulfate. And the final entry in this book is electrophoresis, entry S, another experiment started, but the plate cannot be found for this run. Presumably it was abandoned for some reason. And so we come to the end of this book with a pipette calibrated and found to be accurate to plus or minus about less than 0.1% and reproducible plus or minus 0.1%. I was trying to make sure that my pipettes were accurate. These are very small, relatively small micro pipette, and it's the slope was very good. And I recorded it to a rather large number of decimal point places, 5.3103 plus or minus 0.9. So it should have been 5.31 plus or minus 0.9 to be more precise. Almost at the end of this book. So it's saying that a very rough test with 0.1% protein shows that precipitation begins at between 25 and 30% saturation, and no difference by naked eye once the precipitation began. Maybe a very narrow range. And so there are several more pages. Again, with rather too many decimal places. February 17th, now I'm starting to scale up the experiment. I set up 16 tubes with a range of 32 to 47 grams per 100 milliliters of ammonium sulfate. And only the last three had a precipitate, which came out at room temperature, but not at 5 degrees, etc., etc. Results are promising, however. I was evidently rather pleased with it. And that ends this book, except for a couple of references to Bob Alberti's paper on reversible boundary spreading and pH spreading by Longsworth. Papers of 1948-1947. And we'll have a look at book two and see how the story matures. So here we are looking at book two, which is still in the Department of Chemistry at the University of Wisconsin, 1952. And I say, if found, please return to O. Smith's Department of Chemistry, University of Wisconsin, Madison, Wisconsin, USA, or Balliol College, Oxford, England. So I still am a little bit homesick, I imagine. It begins with solubility measurements, so taking up the work that has already been begun in Book One. The pH of the solutions were determined roughly, and tubes were set up Thursday, February 21st, and measurement on Saturday, February 23rd. And I make a note that the last few tubes were dirty with filter paper threads. All stock solutions have to be filtered through glass. Filter paper threads were not acceptable. And a series of measurements of the optical the transmission the solution over the starting concentration. pH 4.5. Set up another experiment on Saturday, etc. The tubes, these tubes were centrifuged Monday, but determination was not possible until Tuesday. Some tubes showed very slight cloudiness. So evidently something had come out of solution after they had been already centrifuged. So I made a note, normally, therefore, centrifuge only before measurements. A page full of data, pH 4.8, set up another series of tubes. Thursday, March 6th, AM, centrifuge of the Tuesday tubes and measured them in the evening. Several were cloudy. She'll have to decant immediately if the centrifugation is over. So it's obvious that something was happening that I didn't understand there. But there are pages of measurements, all with very precise measurements of to four decimal places, so 31.24, 32.35, and the transmission, etc., etc. Saturday, March 8, set up an experiment with pH 4.5 again. Centrifuged 12 of the tubes, 6 were left. Sunday, working weekend, March 9th, pages of experiments, keeping going. March 16th, more measurements. And then getting back to making lactoglobulin again, or doing something to it, because here it is. Preparation of lactoglobulin for future work, Thursday, the 20th of March. I recovered the old lactoglobulin, which had been made January, which had come down as an oil and later had crystallized in the way that I mentioned, and notes on preparing lactoglobulin for another experiment. It goes on several pages. Back to exposure experiments, some more exposure experiments on the Schlieren optical system. Trying to get different films to work. Now here is another a start of another set of experiments that which I did. So far we've looked at the centrifuge. We've looked mainly at the electrophoresis. We've looked at the, I think somewhere the centrifuge measurements, which I haven't noticed yet, but now we're going to look at the protein with by an antibody method. So there's a change in topic here. Rabbit antibody production, May 20th. To make 50 milliliters of nearly 2% beta-lactoglobulin in 0.15 molar sodium chloride, that's isotonic, and a little bit of methylate to keep it sterile. It talks about making that. So eventually I end up with 0.97% beta-lactoglobulin in 0.15 molar sodium chloride. And then Friday, May 22nd, two rabbits were injected subcutaneously with 20 milligrams for each rabbit, and Monday again a measure injection subcutaneously of 10 milligrams, and Wednesday and Friday, so three or four total doses. And then I make a note that June 2nd, the rabbit too has produced a litter. They gave one its fifth ejection, and number three, a new rabbit, its first of 20 milligrams, and so on. It records Wednesday, Friday, Monday, Wednesday, etc., over the over that period of time. I was having help here, and I don't have a note of who the person was helping, except I have a note here. Decided to try Bob's anti-BSA, anti-bovine serum, albumin serum, with 15 milliliters in centrifuge cups, and using 0.25 more acetic acid to dissolve the precipitate, to try to learn how to quantitate the precipitate that one got with the antibody. June 17th, I'm now making serum. 4 hours at 37 degrees overnight in the cold room, etc. Required for the precipitation curves, precipitin curves, that's the antibody precipitation. A standard beta-lactoglobulin solution, more accurate precipitin tests, 2-3 pages on this. A note that that the corks give absorption in the ultraviolet when extracted with acetic acid. So stop using corks. And comment, there is no doubt that this serum has a low antibody content. Precipitates are small in the test, also tested in a gelatin gel with antigen above for zonal precipitation. Precipitate very light. Same test with Bob's potent serum gives a very heavy precipitate. So I was getting rather poor antibody. Tried to do some light scattering to measure the precipitins. September 23rd, I'm beginning to be a little bit more quantitative because I've got 16 tubes set up roughly with the old 1 over 50 beta-lactoglobulin in 1 to 1 to 1 to 2 dilutions, a rough test with the antiserum, and at a quite reasonably looking precipitation curve, that there is an optimum ratio of antibody to a solution to get precipitation, which of course is well known. A comment then on solubility, electrophoresis, purification, etc. Repeat and get the 10 milliliter test tubes clean and dry, and two good 5 milliliter pipettes, etc. Getting everything very clean. And a comment, get new rabbits. I know at that time, I don't know whether I have a note of it, but I had an accident because in trying to clean my tubes for the solubility measurements with the ammonium sulfate, I used to use a cleaning solution which was made with concentrated nitric acid plus a little bit of alcohol, and it would sit there quietly for a few seconds and then would start to give a catalytic reaction and produce large quantities of nitrogen oxide, NO2, the brown fumes, and would boil and would clean anything. It's very dangerous. And there wasn't a hood in the physical chemistry department, so I used to do this reaction outside. And then one day, by mistake, I used fuming nitric acid instead of nitric acid, which meant there was no latent period. And when I added the alcohol to the fuming nitric acid, it immediately gave this very powerful reaction and sprayed my face and my arms. And fortunately, I had glasses on, but the glass frames were pitted, and I got severe burns over quite a lot of my face, and couldn't get to the water very quickly. I had to get through a door and down a flight of steps before I could get to water. Mm-hmm. And I managed to get most of my face and arms free from the acid, except one place which still I have a scar from. My friend there, who was shared the same room as me in the lab, Dick Goldberg, was very concerned and took me to the hospital immediately, and was very annoyed that the nurses there didn't realize that I was in sort of shock and that it was really very serious. And he was, I remember, very upset about it. But I recovered, and I never used that nitric acid method again. And when I tried to publish the work later on, the journal wouldn't let me describe the reaction quite wisely, because it should never have been used. I learned it, incidentally, I learned it from my chemistry teacher in high school, who used to use it to clean things and demonstrate. Well, not to clean things, but to demonstrate this reaction. So it was a reaction I'd learned as a high school student. Dangerous things. Nobody would do anything like that these days. I'm turning the pages here. The serum and dilution tubes. So I'm back to not antibody experiments, but to precipitation experiments. I could see precipitate with a pretty hopeless cell design. I can't use the vertical mask, must try a horizontal one. I don't know what that refers to, trying to measure optical density. Trying to get light scattering to measure the turbidity. I think I made a mistake here. These are still antibody experiments. Saturday, October 9th, trying to use light scattering. Not very satisfactory. Comment here, the cells are too dirty. Clean and try again. New cell for light scattering. Dust-free bottles, I was trying light scattering. I don't remember ever publishing on this, so I may never have got any useful results from it. Rough test of scattering, about four times more in, etc. No, etc. Not Then another change, a plan for future work, solubility. Centrifuge tests, 15,000 RPM, 2 milliliters solution. So I did some ultra-centrifuge tests. More light scattering, November 6th light scattering. Nothing very profound. For reasons that I don't remember at all, using allantoic fluid and an anti-flu serum. I think I must have been trying to help my girlfriend at that time, who later I married, Lois, later Smithers. And so she was doing antibodies, and I was testing her allantoic fluid with an anti-flu serum to try to get a method of measuring antibodies in allantoic fluid. There are some measurements. And then back to lactoglobulin, November 12th, test of lactoglobulin concentration for solubility work. Unfortunately, methylate absorbs strongly at 278 millimicrons, cannot use it, all the solutions prepared with it. November. Precipitation almost immediately in all but the first two tubes. pH 5.4. December 1st, working on December 1st, I see. Set up 5 lots of 16 tubes. So that's 5 times 16, 80 tubes. December 3rd. December 5th, measurement. Oh, yeah, and this one just like that. And here are some notes. On various papers now, so the idea that the back of the book would be notes on papers in this case is true, that I'm getting into coming backwards from various papers. So I'm going to go to the back and start at the back and virus work with Lois K. Kitsey with LKK, and it talks about a paper by Oster in Science, 1946. A paper by Gerald Oster, Rockefeller. This is going backwards in this book. notes on various papers. Going backwards again from the end of the book. Zim, 1948, Zim, 1948, Zim, 1948, and there it has reached the forward notes on the experiment. So that's the end of book 2, 1952. I'm looking now at book 3, which is 1952 to 1953. Still O. Smith's lab notes, and still at the University of Wisconsin chemistry department. Inserted at the beginning of this book is a letter from Bob, and I'm not sure which Bob this is at the present time. I might remember, but he's writing from back in England in Queen's Road Estate, Beeston, Nottinghamshire, November 27th, 1952. Dear Oliver, just a line to let you know how things are progressing in a saner land, quoted, evidently feeling he's back in England, it's much more sane than in the US. He'd been at Nottingham for 4 months. So far, I haven't managed to start any work, and he goes on, talks about things. Still, I must say, life is very pleasant and we are living fairly comfortably. Food isn't too bad. The only thing in short supplies are good eggs at the moment, butter and cheese. We have as much meat as we can want, as we want, a steak, stew and roast every week, and we aren't short of the other items. He does talk about work a bit. He said, I require, while I am in the scrounging mode, I will mention another item which I'm looking for. I require a small amount of a number of plasma protein fractions, but unfortunately they're unobtainable to my knowledge in England. Most people seem to beg them from the almighty cone at Harvard or from secondary sources. And he's going to write to Jack Williams and to Harold Deutsch, who was also at Wisconsin, but this may take quite a time. If you could ask around to see if anyone has any plasma fractions, I'd be very grateful. And he says what he's wanting: human serum albumin and gamma 2 globulin, etc., etc. Sorry to be such a bee nuisance, bee standing for bloody. I saw Arthur about 3 weeks ago. He's now settled in Birmingham and took to the happy back to the happy routine. I must close now, Oliver. To earn some more money for the income tax office. I can hardly live at the moment supporting a wife and a baby to be, I think. Please remember me to all at Madison. Hope you're still enjoying life and that you are not working too hard. Best wishes for Christmas and the new year. Rather a nice memory. So here we go back to experiment. Looks like precipitation experiments again. Pages of notes on of that sort. double the protein concentration and see what happened. And then December 23rd, summary of results to date, tube number 46 to 58. December 30th, January 2nd, so on it goes. Pages of experiments and all. Cell giving trouble on January 8th. Now, January 12th, which is 6 days, I began to see what was happening in these precipitation experiments. And really what was happening was that they were crystallizing. The protein was crystallizing. And so I have here, on the left-hand side, apparently some amorphous, and that means amorphous precipitate, and then two clear, but a couple of look like little triangular crystals. And I thought that first they might be glass. Yeah, but the diamonds and amorphous material in tube 3, tube 4, remains of the diamond crystals and no needle crystals. Diamonds, many imperfect in 5, some what I call hedgehogs, which are little crisscross crystals of needles, and begin to realize that there are different forms of crystals present in these solutions. The protein is pure enough, and that when it's precipitated with ammonium sulfate, it forms an amorphous precipitate at first, but as it was kept, it turned to crystals. So tube 7, some diamonds, messy, with all sizes of diamonds and funny needle-like crystals. But clearly beginning to understand something that's going on now, because the next few pages are pages of little diagrams of the forms of the crystals that are there. June 14th, I set up a pH 5.1 experiment and with a large number of tubes. 9 days later, and then on the 15th, tube number 1, slight amorphous, one battered crystal, of diamond-shaped crystal, and then tube 2, many fine diamonds and some clusters, and a very little amount of amorphous material, 3 diamonds and some very small single bead-like structure. So I'm beginning to realize that what is happening, as I say, is change in crystal form, which became part of the paper that I later published on them. January 17th, Saturday, a note that on the left says, very satisfactory, pH 5.1. A new lot of 5.1 experiments. On January 21st, found a November ammonium sulfate solutions, glass bottles, and now have been contaminated with a mold. Decided to throw out all but those made since January 14th. So I made new solutions up. On January 30th, I made a note that the instrument is unstable, measuring optical density. the blank compared with this morning was about 99.8, and I was worried about it. Changed the distilled water in the blank cell, and the value came up to 101.3. And I make a note, the distilled water contains something absorbing. In future, use only double distilled water. February 14th, 13 days, crystals appearing of various forms. And the next page is very detailed, recording of numbers, but says not good enough. Repeat both in new tubes and leave for at least 7 days. Now use new lactoglobulin and new ammonium sulfate. Made up new lactoglobulin on Monday, February 9th. Some experiment, there was a 20-day experiment here. And making more lactoglobulin. The note of Saturday, February 14th. The precipitate looks now to contain crystals.
I don't know whether we need dry ice to the plasma. If we can.
Perfect crystals in the top part under low power. A little rectangular crystals and somewhere a little bit of parallelogram crystals. So the beta lactoglobulin is crystallizing okay. Next time use degassed water, it says. Saturday, February 21st, 30 days, and it's looking at crystals again in the tube. I was repeated these experiments many times. 6 days, February 26th, 6 days. pH 5.7. A page here, a summary of the two times pH 5.1 and a cross of through all the observation, useless, too high a concentration. I don't know what that means. Probably everything precipitated. Crossing out pages. A comment Thursday, March 5th. Stop, the instrument is hopeless. Stored solutions with parafilter. Remade the battery connections. So something was wrong. Trying to get material that might be an impurity to look in the ultracentrifuge. pH 4.8 now. And so on and so forth. Preparing more lactoglobulin. I didn't this time know what was later found to be the case, that beta lactoglobulin had two genetic forms, and I was confused about this and was having one form that I called P and one form that I called S, and it's rather difficult to reconstruct at this point. No details of precipitation. Notes on papers. So there were some, again, some notes on papers starting from the back of the book. Starts with Stanley and Anderson, 1941, and Zim, 1948, and Doty, coming backwards now from the back of the book. Chemical extracts, looking for light scattering, going backwards again. Notes on the thesis by E.P. Gajdacek, G-E-I, not G-A-I. Doty and Edsel, some talks on multi-component systems, so going backwards again. Falconer and Taylor, Biochemical Journal, 1946. And then there is a page there which rings a bell. It's talking about the shape of precipitation curves, and the one in the top right-hand corner, constant solvent, is special case of variable solvent. I don't know exactly what that means, but the diagram shows the precipitation curve if there are two components that are differentially precipitated as salt concentration increases. And it's the form of a precipitation curve which I used in my publication of this work. Whether I had used it before then, I'm not sure. And that meets then the forward-going preparation of lactoglobulin. So that's the end. Book three for my part. So here we are now, book four, the last book that I have from my postdoctoral period, 1953. The usual thing at the front, where to return it to if found. So it's starting with a Saturday experiment. The weekends never seem to make any difference throughout my scientific life. pH 4.8, number 2, etc. And we're getting the usual sort of results with pH 4.8. No great, if any, advantage over pH 5.1 is the comment made there on trying an experiment at pH 4.8. And back to always making lactoglobulin. Here is March 30th on a precipitation, on a preparation of beta 2 lactoglobulin that was commenced on the 24th of March. I crystallized lactoglobulin, crystallized lactoglobulin taken from the first dialysis site, etc., etc. Comments on it, just making lactoglobulin again. This business up of P fraction, not really clear anymore what that was, except that there was a P fraction and a D fraction and an S fraction. It was realized that it wasn't a single component. When Wednesday, April 1st, as the comets set up P and S anyway. So there were at least two components, P and S. Crude lactic globulin Thursday, April 2nd, more lactic globulin. Here I have a comment on Monday, April 6th. Very good. Three components. Component 1, 0.8%. Component 2, about 20%. And component 3, about 80%. P number 2 and number 3 are therefore important. That's the 20% and the 80% components. So there was obviously two components there. This is I think the comment here is some here in these books. There's the comment of gelation, and that corresponds to amorphous precipitates rather than waiting long enough for them to crystallize. So you could get an amorphous precipitate, or the precipitation with ammonium sulfate. Amorphous precipitate would occur at quite high concentration of ammonium sulfate, but if you waited long enough, then crystallization would occur and solubility would decrease with the crystals present, and so the precipitation curve would move to the left, and that was part of what I eventually published. Rather confusing at the time, until I understood it. I made an automatic pipette with a mercury seal, made to deliver 0.2 mils per stroke. Eventually I made a rather nice automatic pipette for pipetting 1 mil solution, and it was quite accurate. It was the beginning of what would be later on the Eppendorf micro pipettes, but many years before. I never published it, so I never made any money out of it. But I'm beginning to make an automatic pipette then in April of 1953. Yeah, then I begin my attempt to make an automatic pipette again. There's a 0.2 mil automatic pipette I'm trying to make in different ways. To pipette 0.2 mils. And one to pipette 1 mil. Actually, I still have the 1 mil automatic pipette that I made. It worked, but the precision of tubing was inadequate in those days, and there weren't any O-rings to seal, and the use of Teflon was rather problematic, as one would say these days. But it actually was quite accurate in the end. But I didn't use it for the experiments which were published, so I never published my automatic pipette. But here is more tests of the automatic pipette to see how reproducible it was. Saturday, May 9th, for example, the 0.2 mil automatic pipette plus 1 mil That's one male, I can't read that word, test. So I have, however, I have the comment, I remember very well, that this is a comment that thus the pipettes are good to better than 0.25%. The mean was 20, I'm weighing these solutions afterwards, the mean was 25.98, plus or minus less than 0.1. That's 0.4%, that's 0.25%. So I did make an automatic pipette that was accurate to, was repeatable to 0.25%. Remains to calibrate and set 1 milliliter pipette and repeat the check once again. I rather enjoy the thought of an automatic pipette in those days. And I have Wednesday, May the 13th, set up 8 tubes with the calibrated auto pipette, 0.2 mil use and 1 mil use. The first 8 was set up rapidly without excessive care and using a fairly wide tip on the 1 milliliter pipette. And I have notes on the new construction, where it was a Teflon compressible washer, which was oiled, and the attempt the other way around for the 0.2 mil one, where there was a plunger going, what would be nowadays the same as an Eppendorf, a highly polished central rod with a Teflon washer around it for the 0.2 mil, which would be like an O-ring, and the other one was the opposite way round, where the tube itself was highly polished for the 1 mil one, and the it was as like a Teflon compressible washer sealing.
Wait, you got a second to talk about my everyday stuff?
Yeah.
So, I don't think you've ever had this situation.
And I have a comment here that the... Date on the cell spoils the blank, but not very good anyway. Check again with the reset up with narrow tips. So the tips were disposable. The tips were Pasteur pipettes, glass Pasteur pipettes. So in a sense, it had disposable tips as well. So it really was the equivalent of a modern one, but way before the present ones, and I didn't need it again, so I never did publish it. Pages of the same sort of thing. Had to make her special adapters for the to spin these solutions at high RPM, so the adapters had to be very carefully made, otherwise the tubes would break at the under the centrifugal force. So I have a note here, June 1st, 3 breakages, exclamation mark, and 2 broken, the new larger tubes. Getting ready June 2nd for ultra centrifuge run. And then June 2nd, the ultra centrifuge run itself. 0.4 grams of pure wet crystals made up to 11 mils with buffer, etc., set to dialyze, and test the D and mu when runs are finished. I don't even remember what D and mu are anymore. Optical density and concentration, perhaps. So the extinction coefficient of a 0.1% solution at 278 millimicrons for this beta globulin solution is 0.92 plus or minus 0.01. And then with the new cell, this is the ultracentrifuge run. June 4th, ultracentrifuge run. Wash the cell out with solution and fill from the bottom. Watch for water boundary. Exposure time, slit, more details of the ultracentrifuge, and then back to electrophoresis again. Boundary electrophoresis. Well, interestingly enough, I'm just using a pencil for all these notes. My June 5th experiment says, as near perfectly clean run as ever made. Only 21 showed any trouble, and 76.8x is the maximum reading obtained, probably when the precipitate was out of the field. I'm not sure what that means, but I was pleased with the run. But not so pleased on June 8th, where there's a big cross. And I'm thinking about publication, because I'm saying query curves to be used for paper one on the phase change. That's on the formation of different crystals. pH 4.8, 5.1, 5.4. 5.7, it's a comment on where these were, March 8th, January 16th, December 3rd and 4th, and March, where these different experiments were done. pH 4.8, March 6th, 2 days with a good under it. Continuing then. Not very good, but essentially as before. pH 5.1, very satisfactory, but recalculate, excluding tube 40. pH 5.1 measurements, pH 5.1, and so on. And then here's one summarizing 1 day, 3 days, 13 days, and 30 days, what the precipitation curves were looking like. So then I'm also talking about paper two, material on solubility for paper two, P versus S, the two fractions. But I do see at the bottom a comment that no doubt that the autopipettes have made the method good. See CP2. And that comes to the end of this book, where there are still about 10 pages of blank. So that's the end of my period in recorded results from University of Wisconsin in Madison. I'm not quite sure when the last day was. That the last recorded date in this book is March 18th, 1952, but I'm sure that there were some days thereafter where the date is not recorded. But that's the end of the postdoctoral period.
Good. Oops.